నాస్తాపరేషు భద్రేషు నిత్యం భగవత సేవయా. భగవతీ ఉత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్టికీ. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome within the heart is cleansed, all that is troublesome in the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who's praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Aganatana Randasya Ganagana Chalakaya Chakshunminitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master. He's opened my eyes, blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. We are reading today from what number? 7824. Lakshito kno patita patangamo yata nashim ajansi so saras tata tata vichitram kalo sattva dharmani svadejasa yonu Parampabhattamaha Alakshitokno Patitapatangamo Yatanashim Hojasi So Yatanashim Ha Yatanashim Hojasi So Saras Tata Tatadvi Chitram Klo Satvadamani Svadejasa Yonu Parapipatamaha Alakshitokno Patita Patangamo Yata nashim harasi so sarastata tatati chitram kalu satata damani svatejasa yonu para pipatamaha Mataji? No takers. Okay. Alakshitaha. Invisible. Agno. In the fire. Patitaha. Fallen. Patangamaha. An insect. Yata. Just as. Nasimha. Of Lord Nasimhadev. Ojasi. In the effulgence. Saha. He. Asura. Hiranyakashipu. Tada. At that time. Na. Not. Tat. That. Vichitram. Wonderful. Kalu. Indeed. Satpadamani. In the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in pure goodness. Svadejasa, by his own effulgence. Yaha, he who, the Lord, knew, indeed, Gura, formerly, Apibat, swallowed up, Tamaha, the darkness within the material creation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Just as a small insect falls forcefully into a fire, and the insignificant creature becomes invisible, when Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord, who was full of effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly, during creation, He entered the dark universe and illuminated it by His spiritual effulgence. Purport. The Lord is situated transcendentally in pure goodness. The material world is generally controlled by tamagund, the quality of ignorance. But the spiritual world, because of the presence of the Lord and His effulgence, is free from all contamination by darkness, passion, or contaminated goodness. Although there is a tinge of goodness in this material world in terms of the brahminical qualifications, such qualifications sometimes become invisible because of the strong prevalence of the modes of passion and ignorance. But because the Lord is always transcendentally situated, the material modes of passion and ignorance cannot touch Him. Wherever the Lord is present, there cannot be any darkness from the mode of ignorance. It is stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjha 22:31, Krishna, Suryasam, Maya Haya Adhikara, Yahan Krishna Tahan Nahi Mayara Adhikara. Godhead is light. Nescience is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. This material world is full of darkness and ignorance of spiritual life. But by Bhakti Yoga, this ignorance is dissipated. The Lord appeared because of the Bhakti Yoga exhibited by Prahlad Maharaj. And as soon as the Lord appeared, the influence of Hiranyakashipu's passion and ignorance was vanquished, as the Lord's quality of pure goodness, or the Brahman effulgence, became prominent. In that prominent effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible, or his influence became insignificant. An example illustrating how the darkness of the material world is vanquished is given in the Shastra. When Brahma was created from the lotus stem growing from the abdomen of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Lord Brahma saw everything to be dark. But when he received knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything became clear, as everything becomes clear when one comes from night to sunshine. The important point is that as long as we are in the material modes of nature, we are always in darkness. This darkness cannot be dissipated without the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is invoked by the practice of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti yoga creates a transcendental situation with no tinges of material contamination. Translation, just as a small insect falls forcibly into a fire and the insignificant creature becomes invisible, when Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord, who is full of effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly, during creation, he entered the dark universe and illuminated it by his spiritual effulgence. Tamaginatam randasya ganagana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam jinatasmai shri gurave namaha. Offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes blinded by the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. So the Bhagavatam itself states its own self-effulgence. It says, Krishna sva damo bhagate dharma gyandvi saha kalo nasta dushimesha pranarko dunoditaha. This Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. And Prabhupada makes it very clear that it's not another Purana. It's the Bhagavatam itself, this Bhagavat Purana, that is the light which will cause the darkness to go away. Jai. Shri Shri Gornitai, Shri Rara, Smihari, Vishakalalita, Shri Shri Ram, Sitaram, Lakshman Hanuman ki Jai. So, in this verse, in this purport, Prabhupada quotes his banner from Back to Godhead. Godhead is light and essence is darkness. This banner brought me to this movement because when I was handed a magazine in 1971 near Trafalgar Square in London by a very kind Mataji, whom I have no idea who it might be, I looked at the cover and that's the first thing that jumped out at me was the words that Prabhupada quotes here. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. So when you look at the actual Bengali, Krishna Suryasam, I was talking with Narottam last night, and we were discussing this, that it's the light that overcomes Maya, Maya Haya Adhikara. That light actually diminishes Maya. Yahan Krishna, Tahari Nahi. It takes where there is that light, there's no darkness, there's no Maya. Mayahara Adhikar, no influence of Maya. That's the actual, if you go word for word. And how Prabhupada translated that for us was Godhead is light and nescience is darkness. He didn't say anything, Maya's covering you, now you're going to be uncovered by from ignorance and from Maya. No, he put it in a very poetic way that a young man like myself and so many others who've seen that banner can actually completely understand it. Just one flash, one moment of understanding. Where there's Godhead, there's no nescience. And this word nescience is also very unique. If you look in many dictionaries, you won't find the word nescience. But it's the other side of the darkness. It is, when it says there's no nescience, it means that there's no lack of science of understanding the soul. And even though, as a young man, I didn't quite grasp what it meant, the word struck so deeply into my heart, it transcended my brain, it transcended my mind. That's what happens when something becomes very effulgent. If you take some kind of a small object, dark object, and you put it up against a very bright light, that object disappears. You can't see it because that light completely envelops it, as described in this verse. So when you take this knowledge and you put it into the material tattva, gradually that light envelops that darkness that you have been living under, and your world all of a sudden becomes bright. So many children will tell you, I'm sure we've all had the experience, that when we go to bed at night and it's very dark, we become fearful of the dark. Mommy, I'm fearful of the dark. Has anyone experienced that as a child? They want the door left a little open, or a nightlight put on, or some candle burning just to dissipate the total blackness of dark. It's actually very frightening to be in complete darkness. And once one is aware of the fact that there is light to be had, one wants more of it. One wants to find solace and wisdom in light. And that light doesn't mean what we think it is, photon, the way the material scientists describe it as photons, you know, hitting our eyeballs and so on. No, it's not like that. The light of the Bhagavad is not some light bulb. It's the knowledge that arises within the heart, and one begins to perceive everything differently. Because everything in this material world is, as Prabhupada said, a matter of perception. So once we perceive things through the light of the Bhagavad, everything shifts. If you can imagine, a lot of young people today, and stretching all the way back to the beginning of this movement, when they were given this light of the Bhagavad, their whole world shifted. They were able to cut so many attachments. That's the effect of that vigyan. Not just gyan, but vigyan. In many places, Prabhupada writes, you can never become self-realized simply through understanding gyan, through becoming scholarly, through becoming, even reading his books. Prabhupada makes one statement. You can't even become enlightened through only reading his books. Because to read his books means to understand his instructions. So you have to act on the instructions. And as Prabhupada pointed out in this verse, the action in the material world is through what? Bhakti. Devotion. And that bhakti has to be done under the watchful guidance of the pure devotee. That's the difference between a person who says, oh, I'm studying, I'm doing so many types of things, but I'm not following your guru's way. I'm doing my own bhakti. But actually, unless they have a bona fide spiritual master in the disciplic succession and are taking his instructions, the light that they are receiving will be helpful, but it will not be complete. They will not take the full journey back home, back to Godhead. There will be some benefit, just like Prabhupada said, there's some benefit in chanting Nitai Gaur, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. There's some benefit, no doubt. But there's not full benefit. Prabhupada makes that point in a talk that he had, I forget which year, but makes the point, one has to actually chant the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari. And unless one follows the spiritual master's orders, one cannot be successful in spiritual life. So it's really very important to, in order to fully enjoy the benefits of the light of the Bhagavad, which creates vigyan in the heart, which then creates more desire to actually serve properly in the process of bhakti yoga, the more one follows those orders, the more that bhakti yoga will have its effect. And to whatever degree, to whatever percentage you're following, to that degree you will get the results. So in this case, of course, Aranyakashipu, Mr. Soft Bed, as we know, that means soft bed, he finally got his comeuppance. Yesterday Indians all over the world celebrated Holi. What is Holi celebrating? The time when Horika, she was vanquished while Prahlad survived the fire. This is the actual, I don't even know if most Indians understand what Holi actually celebrates. And in this case, we have the Prahlad Maharaj, whose final reward for all of his faith is that the Lord appeared before him in this fierce form of Lord Nrsimha in order to vanquish his demonic father. Now, this demonic father was a Brahmin. He understood the Vedas to a certain degree. And he knew about Punya, he knew about Pap, he knew all these things. But at the same time, he didn't follow. He was not a follower of a pure devotee of Krishna, even a pure devotee of Vishnu. So therefore, he didn't get the result fully that is being offered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has really given us something unique and special, over and above all the other manifestations in Vishnu forms. He's given us the opportunity to enter into the highest Ras, the Madhurya Ras, if it is our desire. We can actually cultivate that by this process of following in the footsteps of our acharyas. Now, not everyone will have that desire, and some will have a different type of spiritual result, the spiritual body. But this is the most intimate relationship with Krishna. And this is very rare in it being offered. Prahlad Maharaj, he was completely satisfied. Why? Because whenever anyone takes darshan of the Lord, they are completely satisfied. And that's why Prabhupada gave us this wonderful deity worship, so that we could actually take advantage, even with our limited senses, of taking darshan of the Lord. And gradually through this process, over and over again, we're taking on this wonderful darshan and effect of darshan, so that that light of the Bhagavat will increase and grow within us. So here we have this demon. He finally gets his comeuppance. He's absorbed into the body by the light, and eventually he's liberated by the wishes of his son, who's nothing but a well-wisher for all the living entities. What a mood that we should be in. We have so much prajalpa about each other, about our managers, about the ISKCON society, and so on. We have to reduce that and only see what, like Prahlad sees through the eyes of someone who only wants compassion and only wants to be compassionate and to have everyone become liberated or find their spiritual identity. That's the mood of the pure devotee. And that was Prabhupada's mood. When you think about it, he had so many really fallen disciples around, most fallen, you know, Patita Pavan. It was just really, we were in the worst condition. And Prabhupada was so tolerant and yet very stern. He was a bold preacher, but at the same time, a kind father. And sometimes he was a father who would correct us in ways that were, very, very strict. So you need to have that kind of a pure devotee in your life who will give you that kind of guidance and love. And as a Shiksha Guru in ISKCON, not just in ISKCON, for anyone who takes advantage, Srila Prabhupada offers that kind of guidance through his books, his examples, his talks, his lectures, so many things. And we did a survey at the ILS seminars about, with 300 devotees, doing a survey about how many people had read the Bhagavad Gita how many times, how many people had read Bhagavatam all the way through how many times, how many people had read the Chaitanya Charitamrita all the way through, all the time, all the way, you know. So there was a gathering of ISKCON managers there. It was a pretty good cross-section. And the result was that the Bhagavad Gita, 90% had read it once. 90%. So that means 10% had not read it through one time. And 46% had read it twice. and about 18% had read it three times. And the Bhagavatam, there was less than 50% who'd read it all the way through once. And there was less than 5% who'd read it through twice. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was less than 10% that had read it through once. So these are our leaders. we have barely read the books. It's a pretty sad statement. So we have to really begin to understand the importance of Prabhupada's instructions in that regard, because within those books, I was speaking to Rasaraj Prabhu yesterday, within those books there's certain pearls that seem to escape us on first reading. But when you study them, certain lines have meaning to, and there'll be different ones for different people, have meaning to us. They jump out at us like transcendental literature does. It jumps into your heart. It's how we all became devotees. Narottam was mentioning yesterday. He said it's interesting that the way in which Prabhupada was so bold in his preaching, he wasn't very compromising, especially after the first year or two. He really started to become very strong in presenting Krishna consciousness without any kind of mitigation. In the beginning he was very patient, didn't give too much limits to things, but gradually, pretty quickly, he introduced, the four regulative principles and all different types of restrictions. And he was very bold in speaking out about various Mayavad philosophies, how he viewed science, world leaders. He didn't mince his words at all. And when you think about him as a bold preacher, what did that do? It created a whole army of devotees very quickly, a whole army of followers. So we were speaking about it. We said, how did that happen that so many people became devotees so quickly in Western countries? They had no previous experience of Hindu culture or Krishna or anything. And many were atheists or agnostics. And Narottam noted, he said, that it's because Prabhupada, with those words, which are what part of the light of the Bhagavad is, they cut our attachments. They cut those attachments so strongly that we were willing to leave our families. And it still happens today. It's not that it doesn't, it's all happened in one degree or another for every one of you. Prabhupada's words somehow cut your attachment to becoming, some professional person in material life or wealthy or gaining fame or distinction or adoration to a certain degree, because it still carries on while we're, becoming purified. But that kind of preaching is the kind of preaching that Prahlad did to his father. And his father was very resistant because he was a very big demon. But people today, they're very actually responsive to the truth. They like Trump, Why do they like Trump in America? Because he's just blasting, a certain type of truth into the ether. And people are gravitated towards that because they want authenticity. They desire to hear the truth. I said to my mother, after some time I was taking to Krishna consciousness, I was still Bhaktadeva, I said, Mom, why didn't you tell me everything that I'm learning in these books when I was young? And she didn't really have an answer. But the answer is she didn't know. She was not awake. She was in tamagun. She was in ignorance. And that's the world we live in. And it also exists within our own ISKCON society. We're fighting the modes of passion and we're fighting the modes of ignorance. It's going on. We're also, some of us, very attached to the sattva gun. We want to do good to others and do these projects that may or may not have particular Krishna conscious relevance. And it's emerging from that, from those three modes, because into the mode of sudasattva, of pure goodness, that is required for our full enjoyment of the association of Krishna. Because Krishna is never touched by these modes. He's descended in a form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's descended in the pure devotees such as Srila Prabhupada. But he himself is never affected. And he says over and over again, I'm never affected by the three modes of nature. And in that way, we understand that is God. God is never touched by the modes of nature. But we are. So how do we continue to emerge from our unconscious? We have to keep the light, the effulgence of the Lord around us, like full-time devotees do, or devotees who are living outside do on a regular basis. And gradually, we make that advancement, because light dispels darkness. It's really very simple. And light is also that which gives us peace. Darkness makes us fear, because we can't see what's coming. But with light, we understand what's coming. We understand when the airport in Belgium is blown up. We understand this is just another manifestation of karma. Of course, this is a slaughterhouse civilization. What do they expect? And Prabhupada says here in this purport that in this age, so many of us are getting, we're getting affected, because the mode of ignorance is so strong that it even covers the light of the Brahmins, the light of the Vedas. It tries to do that all the time. And that's our battle. And that's why Prabhupada was such a soldier. When we present Prabhupada, he's not a Hindu monk who, with a few rupees, came begging to America. That's not the proper portrayal of our Srila Prabhupada. No, he's a bold preacher who came to give something so strong and so valuable to the West. And he was a soldier, and he created an army to do that. He's a general. He's not some, you know, meek monk. And every time I see him portrayed like that, I cringe. That's not my Prabhupada, because he cut with the sword of knowledge. He cut that attachment. And that's what, you know, that's what is there. Tasmad aganya sambhutam hrishtam genashi tatmanaha chitvainam samas samsayam yogam attisjo tista bharata. Therefore, the doubts that have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, stand and fight. This is our job. We're soldiers. And we don't discriminate in the genders. We're like the Israeli army. We put the men in uniform, and we put the women in uniform also. We're all out there. I got that back to Godhead from a woman, from Mataji. God bless her. So, this is just a part of how we should be appreciating when the effulgence of the Lord absorbs the darkness of someone like Hiranyakumar. You can't even see him in that brilliance. So we also have to spread our brilliance in how we act, in how we talk, in how we have confidence that the light of the Bhagavat will actually dispel darkness. We should never be afraid. And Prabhupada was never afraid. He went to the courts. He wanted this light of the Bhagavat. Practically 50% of his attention was towards science. He wanted to present the science of Krishna consciousness to scientists in a way that it would be defeating their atheistic conclusions. That was our Prabhupada. He wasn't meek in any way, and neither should any of us be meek. And that means we have to study his books. If we have good memories, not like mine, but if we have good memories, we should be able to recite many slokas in defense. And I will tell you the story now that I met a young man. He's 27 now. He's an initiated ISKCON devotee. He's originally from Bihar. And he was living in Vrindavan. And how he got to Vrindavan is very interesting. His grandfather always engaged him in reading the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. not Prabhupada's at that time. And his mother was also very devotional. This is a true story. So she told him one time when he was about 11, she says, you know, in Vrindavan, Radharani always takes care of her devotees. When you're in Vrindavan, you don't have to go hungry because Radharani will always arrange to feed you. So this boy was very taken with this story. And on a field trip, he ditched the field trip and he got on a train from Bihar to Mathura. And he walked from Mathura to Vrindavan. And by this time, he was very hungry. And nobody came to feed him. And the day was progressing and he was a young boy and he started to cry. And a sadhu came by and he saw that he was crying and he said, what are you crying? He said, well, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten. And the sadhu said, well, how much money do you have? He said, I have 100 rupees. He said, 100 rupees? He said, that's why you're not being fed. You're not depending on Krishna. You're simply holding on to your rupees. Throw that rupees into the Jamuna immediately. Boy was, of course, taken the sadhu. He has to do so. He immediately threw the 100 rupees into the Jamuna. And the sadhu left. And still, nobody came to feed him. So some hours again passed. Finally, a Western Madhaji came by. And he was crying again. And she said, why are you crying? And he explained. So she said, oh, come with me. And she took him to her place somewhere. And she had an apartment, Lloyd Bazaar, and she cooked a whole meal for him, served him. And then she took him back to the train, put him on the train, paid for his ticket, and sent him back home. So the next year, he went back, he told his mother about this story. He wanted to go back the next year. So we went back the next year. And he looked with his mother. He looked for this house. It was in a little side street and where this woman had fed him. But no matter how much he looked, he couldn't find the street. And he couldn't find the little apartment that she had there. And he never saw her again. And so he understood for himself. He said, somehow or another, Radharani, she arranged to feed me. So he began to study even more this Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And he moved to Vrindavan. And as he got out of school, he moved to Vrindavan. And then there was a contest in 2011, Bhagavad Gita contest that is put on in Bangalore. And so he, just by chance, they go from one town to another putting on, you know, seeing who will qualify for the contest. And he entered in Vrindavan and he won. So that meant that he would go to Bangalore for this contest. And he went to Bangalore, and there were many different, it was like, you know, it's once every 10 years they have this contest, and there were many people from all over the world competing for their being able to answer questions and defend their questions with logic based on the Gita and various Vedanta scriptures. So he became, you know, from going from 100, he started to go up the ladder. There was well over a thousand people. President of India was in the final. She was there for the final round. And he was answering every question correctly. So he was going right up the ladder. But he had 598 points out of 600. But he didn't answer, according to them, the question correctly. Even he argued, no, this is the correct answer. He made argument that it was, but they didn't accept. So he was leaving the arena, and someone stopped and said, look, and his name was on the top. They had changed their mind. They'd given him, he gave the correct answer, and he won the Bhagavad Gita contest. So he went back up on the stage, and he had Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in his hand. This is our light of the Bhagavad. And he said to the Mayavads, because this was put on mainly by Mayavadi organization, he said, you see, you are all rascals because you don't accept that the speaker of this Bhagavad Gita is a person. It is Krishna. And you, shame on you, he said to them. These are the words, shame on you. And he said, you should all read this Bhagavad Gita as it is. The president of India was sitting in the front row. She came up on stage and she embraced him and said to everyone, he has defended the honor of India. And from that microphone, this young man, he was only 23, there was a big crowd there, he took 3,000 orders for the Bhagavad Gita as it is of Srila Prabhupada. 3,000 orders. This is bold preaching. You go in front of a bunch of thousands of people, many Mayavads, in their own arena, and you boldly declare it that you should be ashamed of yourself. This is, I'm sure Srila Prabhupada would be very happy. This young man distributes between 14 and 17,000 Bhagavad Gitas per year. He's 27 years old now, lives in Vrindavan. So this is such a wonderful example. And we have to follow in this example in our preaching. And then we'll make many, many more. We can't be afraid to preach this light of the Bhagavad very strongly. More and more people will wake up. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Wake up, sleeping soul. If by Prabhupada's teaching and bold preaching, he cut our attachments, certainly it can work anywhere in the world. So this is the purport, to Prabhupada's purport, that somehow or another I can only encourage everyone to speak very strongly. And at the same time, you have to be tactful. People have their beliefs and everything. But wait for the moment. Krishna will give you that time how to preach in a way that will actually help people cut their attachments. And therefore become attached to Krishna and to Prabhupada, whose words are so bright that even a soul covered by the modes of ignorance, passion, like myself, could somehow or another see their brilliance. So maybe there's some questions. It's 9 o'clock. Manal. Mataji in the back.
Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the enlightening class. And my question is, like, in the beginning you said, like, you have to take the shelter of Guru, like, you know, to be successful in your life. And Krishna, you have to take shelter of Guru to be successful in your life. And it's basically, Krishna consciousness is like, you know, you're following the instruction which is given in the Vedic literature, right? Or, so my question is, it's like, you know, when you're going out, you're talking to people, if somebody finds it something interesting, like, you know, whatever we have spoken or whatever we have the conversation, and he picks up something. So is that person's life is Krishna consciousness? And if it's Krishna consciousness, then is his life is successful?
Well, you know, anyone just chanting the Maha Mantra, their path to Godhead is guaranteed. We don't know how long it will take. But just by uttering those syllables, one has the benefit of getting on the train back home, back to Godhead. So if your question is whether someone who has some...
He finds something interesting, like there's something which probably attracted, like, you know, that's how it starts. Like, you know, if he might... found, like, you know, some interesting point, and the person is following, he or she, whosoever, the person is following all through the life. Does it give success to a person? Like, probably he has not taken the shelter, he's not, like, you know, not a scorn
okay.
follower.
Well, I understand, okay, but there are different stages in one's purification. You know, we go from nam aparad to nam bas. In our chanting, in, you know, the clearing stage, and then we get to this final stage of Sudanam. So we're progressing in that. So someone who's progressing in that way eventually has to come to the stage of actually Sudanam, or being able to chant the holy name of the Lord offenselessly. And to do that, we have a whole process that is described in our Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's a science of how we do that. And it includes many different factors to provide fertile ground for that chanting, that pure chanting. Because it is the holy name upon which we are riding to go home, back to Godhead. And that's everything that we do, from taking prasad to our deity worship to our particular services, is all meant to be that fertile ground for that Sudanam to eventually fructify, become that. So that person is making progress, and we have to see that they're making progress. And the engagement of that person is progressive. So we have to be good gardeners, and we have to simply give them the fertilizer, the food, the rain that will help that bhakti lata bij, will help that seed of devotion begin to grow and then fructify. And that's our job as preachers. And sometimes it's a gentle approach, and oft times it's a bold approach. It just depends on the situation. Kala pata desh, the time, the circumstance.
Thank you.
Any other questions? And I just wanted to ask, who here was at the screening of the videos on Gaur Purnim? Anybody came to watch it? How many? I'm just curious how many people watched it. Okay, so not so many. So we're arranging for Ananta in the library to have files of the various video trailers and some full shows. So if you want to, go and see, there's about an hour's worth. He should have that very soon, and then you can just sit in the library and watch those for yourself. So thank you very much. I'll be leaving tomorrow morning once again, but I want to thank everyone for their kind hospitality. It's always a real privilege to come here to sit with all the wonderful devotees, to be with you, and you're always very kind to me. I appreciate you even are so generous you sat in this class, and as always, I wish you well and advancement in Krishna consciousness. And I thank you very much for your sincerity and your love. Hare Krishna.